Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And third man in this week.
Andrew Unterberger, Senior Editor, Digital Side of Billboard here.
All right, we're talking more Grammys this week on the podcast. The last couple weeks, we were talking about the Grammys trying to predict winners. I guess I'll just say it right now. I don't think any of us did too well.
No, I think I did especially poorly. I think Trevor maybe got one. You had album, right?
I certainly had album. Did I not have best? I thought we all kind of agreed for best new artist, but maybe
I said her.
I feel like conventional wisdom suggested Dua would win. Mm-hmm. I think people are rooting for that. The kind of pop nominee of the crowd. I almost tweeted Andrew to tell him. When Casey won Album of the Year, because it was so obvious and so well.
Oh, it was so obvious, right? Eight nominees and blockbusters and critical darlings, and yet one of them was a clear favorite going into it.
Well, one of them's a clear favorite coming out of it. Well, that's for sure.
Can't argue with that.
You both kind of ignored me when I said This Is America could win Song of the Year.
I did see. I can't remember if it was Bovada or like one of the other major like gambling sites. They have odds on everything, and they had odds on the Grammys, and they had This Is America as the favorite going in. I don't think I disregarded you entirely because I thought it had a chance because it was such a polarizing song that I thought that it could kind of stand out from a crowded pack. But you're right. I didn't think it was the front runner, and here we are.
Once it won Song of the Year, though, which is actually a pretty early award. I guess the tandem. I mean, in the past couple of years, especially, they've been a very linked pair. Even though Bruno won for two different songs, but still Bruno and then Adele and such and such. So
I think 30 out of 61 years total. It's gone to the same song for both Song and Record of the Year.
We'll talk more Grammys, the few things we got right, what we didn't, and talk highlights of the night overall as well. So that's all coming up. As always, though, let's get to this week's charts first. Something pretty different going on in the top 10 this week. Almost hits number one. Here's this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. One.
Number 10.
I play with this kitty like you play with your guitar.
Cause girls like you, like you, guys like me. So now when I come through, I need a girl like you. Yeah, yeah, girls like you, girl like you.
Number 9.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma will probably know me. Get my bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 8.
I just poured something in my cup. I've been wanting something I can feel. Promise I am never letting up. Money in your palm will make you real.
Number 7.
Look what you taught me. And for that I say thank you. Next, next, thank you. Next, next, thank you. Next, I'm so fucking grateful for my ex. Thank you.
Number 6.
Number 5.
number 5.
Yeah. 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 Gone on you with the pick and roll. Younger flame, he in sicko mode.
Number 4.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much. Or you'd be left in the dust.
Number 3.
So you could take it.
Number 2.
I want to raise your spirits. I want to see you smile. No, that means I'll have to leave.
And number 1.
With a no-show at the Grammys, but she can be found once again at number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. That is Miss Ariana, officially Grammy winner grande.
First time.
For Best Pop Vocal Album for Sweetener. Of course, we're already way past Sweetener on the charts. We're talking all things Thank You Next and current single Seven Rings, number 1 for a third week atop the Billboard Hot 100. So this streak, this Thank You Next era, 10 weeks at number 1 between the two singles, just keeps on chugging along. Seven Rings is the top streaming and top selling song of the week once again this week. And that third metric, radio, is flying up quickly as well. Hits the top 10 this week on the radio songs chart. Just his third week on the chart, actually. So radio, which really proved in 2018 how much of a fan it was of Ariana Grande with all the Sweetener singles. Picking up on this one very, very, very quickly as well.
Yeah, top 10 on radio songs, only 3 weeks, and the fastest overall since Drake's In My Feelings last summer. Mm-hmm. Turned out to be a pretty big hit.
Yeah, no, this is a very exciting time for Miss Grande, and even more so, you know, reinforcements coming on the charts probably next week. I saw over the weekend she occupied all 12 spots of the top 12 on Spotify, both U.S. and global. So I think it's not unreasonable to assume that we'll be hearing from her on the chart next week.
Yeah, the album, Thank You Next, headed for a number one debut on the Billboard 200, maybe 300,000 units, which is a huge week. Break up with your girlfriend, I'm bored. Debut somewhere high in the Hot 100. That's already the new single being promoted to radio. So as much as we've talked about all these Ariana singles kind of overlapping each other, Seven Rings is still rising. They're already releasing and promoting Break Up With Your Girlfriend.
Also, salute to a 12-track album in the year 2019. Don't see a lot of them now. It's a lot of, you know, 7, 8, 9-track, you know, is it an EP? Is it an album? And it's a lot of, you know, 22-track colossuses. But you don't see a lot that are really in that that kind of classic 12-track mold. I respect Ariana for that.
All right, besides Ariana Grande, one thing Gary mentioned kind of teased a song that was close to the top but not quite there, and you guys just heard in the medley. The first time we've heard this song, actually this high in the medley countdown, number 2 this week on the Hot 100, it is the resurgence of Happier by Marshmello and Bastille. So Marshmello hosted a concert in the Fortnite universe. We know how big video games are. You see people playing them all the time on YouTube. Millions of people tuning in for this particular concert, which not only had Happier, but some of his other big hits in recent months. The songs Alone, Everyday, the collab with Logic, plenty others. I mean, all that activity, excitement around it gave a huge bump in sales. And, of course, we live in a streaming world now, so a huge bump in streams as well. Enough to get the song all the way to number 2. Of course, that means it's one short of number 1, but Miss Grande a little too powerful for it, but no matter, a new peak on the Hot 100 for Happier, number 2.
I will say, until this whole concert came about, the main thing I knew about Fortnite is that a lot of athletes play it, mm-hmm. and it's come up as, are they playing it too much because they could be hurting their wrists or hands? And there's been talk with the
like
Red Sox.
Carpal tunnel,
or just even mentally, are they focusing on their craft, or are they playing this game too much?
There was like a relief pitcher for the Detroit Tigers, I remember a decade ago, who like injured himself and had to go on the DL because he was playing Guitar Hero too much. Yeah. Or like, you know, I don't know, he got too into it and strained a wrist or something. I haven't heard about that. That seems unlikely to me, but you know, I guess you never know. Stranger things have happened in the world of sports.
So yeah, 51.8 million U.S. streams, more than twice as many as it ever had before this week. So number two on streaming songs. So yeah, the kind of funny. Last week we were talking on the podcast about how it felt like it was the early 2000s with Backstreet Boys back at number one. And a week later, we're talking about Fortnite, which didn't exist back then, as far as I know.
90s are over. Yeah. Quit living in the past, Gary.
All right, kicking off the top 10, we heard a song that, has now been in the top 10 more than any other song. Ties the record for the most weeks ever in the top 10. Maroon 5's Girls Like You featuring Cardi B. Now 33 weeks in the top 10. That ties a record in the Hot 100's entire history. Ed Sheeran's Shape of You didn't have the record for too long, 2017.
Billy. What do you want from me? Why don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go?
Just outside the top 10, one of your favorite artists, Andrew, this time's up perfectly. Billie Eilish, her first top 20 hit, first top 40 hit on the Hot 100. Bury a Friend goes 74 to 14 after its first full week of tracking. The album's coming out.
It's a very exciting development for Miss Eilish. It's a big step for her. It's a big leap over her previous chart peak, which I think was like number 52 for When the Party's Over. But it seems like, you know, every song she releases, you know, the momentum builds a little bit. Now, I was talking with one of our coworkers, Chris Payne, today, and he was comparing her to Lorde, where she sort of gets that foothold and all and kind of takes off a pop from there. And I commented that Billie Eilish has the career that Lorde would have if Royals was her 10th song instead of her first song, basically. Whereas, you know, Lorde kind of came out right out the gate with Royals, and then she had to battle, is she a one-hit wonder? You know, is she a pop star? Is she an alt-star? Like, what do we do with her at this point, basically? Billie Eilish already has her fan base in place, and she's kind of built very slowly with each song, and now she's at the point where she's having top 20 hits that don't really sound like top 20 hits. I mean, the song Bury a Friend, I think it's a great song, but it doesn't sound like anything you'd hear on pop radio.
Yeah.
Or all radio, for that matter. It's very grimy and dark and kind of sinister. And, you know, to me it sounds like something almost off of Kanye West's Yeezus. Like, it's got that sort of like grinding industrial sound to it. And I'm very curious to see where she catches on with the song, if anywhere. But I think it's pretty clear that she doesn't need radio to have hits, and that her fan base and just kind of building momentum one song at a time is really taking her to the top anyway.
All right. We've been talking charts. Sort of been licking our wounds about Grammy predictions. This is kind of why I feel like the last couple of weeks I sort of sat back a little bit on making picks. Just you and Paul Grine, who is our other guest, were both so confident this was going to win. There's certain categories you
disagree. I was not confident about anything except for Shallow winning Song of the Year, which was as wrong as anything. I mean, historically the Grammys are very hard to predict unless it's a year like an Adele 25 year where it's just like, okay, right, this album outsold the entire rest of the industry combined. Of course, it's going to win Album of the Year. It's hard to choose. It's hard. The narratives aren't consistent. The voting body is very unpredictable. And now there's 8 nominees instead of 5.
Wait, you really put 25 over Lemonade that clearly?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
like,
especially
the 21 year, I'll give anybody. But the
25 year piggybacked off the 21 year. So
But I mean, you didn't think there was like a risk of, you know, are they really going to triple crown her again? Is it, you know, I mean,
I think you have to remember how big Hello was.
Look, you don't sell 3.3 million albums in a week and then get snubbed at the Grammys. It just doesn't happen. I mean, regardless of which album was actually better.
This happened one time. We have one example to pick from.
But this year there wasn't really an album like that. There was no one album that either had overwhelming sales totals or combined massive commercial success with massive critical success and a Grammy's legacy dating back a couple Grammys already. I thought Cardi B was the closest probably, but she's still a relatively new artist and rap is still a relatively unrewarded genre when it comes to the Grammys Big Four. And so you could talk yourself into narratives. You could say, well, Brandi Carlile is the most veteran artist and she's the least like the other nominees, so maybe she'll get that kind of vote. Or Black Panther has the name recognition and has Kendrick Lamar and people want to make a makeup call for him losing for Damn last year. And you could say that for about 5 or 6 of the nominees, but there was no one where it's like, oh yeah, of course they're just going to give it to that person. It just didn't shake out that way this year.
All right, we'll go category by category of the Big Four and the pop categories that we talked about, and also want to just get into some of what I thought were the highlights. So what you guys thought were the highlights, but yeah, overall, my impressions were that, you know, as much as we sort of it's sort of the sport is to criticize the Grammys. I thought overall, I give this year's Grammys good marks. Women dominated the performances. Women won two of the big four awards, and hip hop won the other two. So you know, for all the talk of lack of diversity, which has really plagued the Grammys for a long time, I feel like maybe the big takeaway, at least this year, diversity really was the big winner. It wasn't at first. I think when Michelle Obama and everybody came out at the beginning, it was I was kind of thinking, is this just going to be?
Yeah, is this going to be the lip service?
Right, exactly. But then with so many performances, then the actual wins. I feel like it's safe to say between women and hip hop, diversity was the big winner this year.
Yeah. So there were 18 performances at the Grammys this year. Do you know how many of them didn't include a single female lead performer?
How many did not
did
include?
Not. Or are we going to make it more a better worded question? I guess would be how many of the 18 did include at least one female lead performer out of 18?
I immediately
regret asking this question. The answer is 15. So that there was Post Malone and the Chili Peppers, Travis, James Blake, and Earth, Wind & Fire for some reason, and the third one was Dan and Shay, the country.
Oh yeah,
all right. Huh. Every other performance, at least one legit female lead performer.
Legit.
Well, and I'm saying not like a backing vocalist, not like a violinist or something like that. Yeah. Like a named female performer.
So would you agree, Andrew, that for all the talk, what was hip hop going to win? Were women going to actually win awards this year? It seems like all these promises came through.
It does seem like as much as the Grammys can never get a year right, they basically got this year right. You can quibble about Kacey Musgraves winning Album of the Year versus some of the other candidates. We can talk about that more later. But I don't think people would consider it an undeserving or out of touch winner. It seems like an album that a lot of people really loved. And Dua Lipa for Best New Artist, same sort of thing. And then the two historic wins for This Is America, first ever winner of both first ever rap winner of both Song of the Year and Record of the Year. And then the performances there were not only just in terms of there were a lot of female performers, but just an incredible variety of female performers too. You know, R&B, country, folk, dance, pop, rock, like and several that kind of combined. Like that her performance is that she's nominated in the R&B categories. That sounded like a rock song to me.
Yeah,
and she was playing guitar. Janelle Monáe, same kind of thing. So I thought it was really impressive. And yeah, but between the winners and the performances, I would say it's one of the strongest Grammys we've had in recent years. Not a perfect one. We can talk about some of the flaws later if you want. But in terms of just across the board, no major complaints. No, you could leave these Grammys actually feeling good about the Grammys for once. And I can't remember. I've been writing about music for most of the decade, and I can't remember another time I could say that.
Trevor, you were saying last week how you wanted a shorter Grammys. It was still going on at about a quarter midnight. This was almost a 4-hour show.
It was noticeably long, and of course. Part of that, I understand. Well, I don't understand what it's like to win a Grammy, but
not yet, Trevor. You'll get there someday.
I'm sure. But I always, for the life of me, wonder how the people who play in these award shows cannot anticipate. Yes, it's going to take somebody 50 seconds to get to the stage because they're, I feel like a Tool in a way, but I was like when her kind of was going and then coming back, and then I was like, I know the producer somewhere is screaming his head off that, he has to wait for you to get up there and then take your speech. Cardi took her time to get up there. And I get the emotion and everything, but I always wonder how they just can't plan for these moments better, because then it turns into this rush job where you have to cut everybody off. You have to slam 5 awards at the end together. I just for the life of me, do not get a award show.
Trevor, that cutoff music is playing. We let you talk way too long, but we let you talk as long as you could. But we gotta play you off with that music.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Oh, that's cute.
You know what my observation was about the cutoff music? Because it happened a lot. I don't know how many people. It was more
certainly
than
like the last 3 or 4
yeah,
artists.
Yeah, right.
Those are the biggest ones, certainly.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Well, why does that cutoff music still sound like it's played by a big band from like the 1930s? Mm. How come there's been no movement forward.
No, the music in the field.
Yeah, that gets.
Music.
Yeah, why is it always that schmaltzy music?
What do you want it to be?
It could be something with some beats, something.
Yeah,
more.
No.
Gary is not going to.
A little your beloved Trap House, maybe, Trevor.
But Gary, literally the most unbeat person I know. Gary,
it's a very George Costanza type complaint.
Anti-rhythmic. He's like, he's for his guitars, for his pianos, for his string instruments. Now he wants a little bit of drums, his tambourines, I think.
Something that sounds like it's from the rock era, I guess.
There's something sort of, I think, gradually elegant that you can kind of start slow and work up. It's not going to be some sort of big, like da 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 da. Like goodbye.
It's also so somber, though. It's very. It just sort of puts a downer on there. Not only are we getting you off the stage, this music just feels very sad.
The interesting thing to me is the distinction that every award show makes between whether or not we'll acquiesce if they keep talking, or whether or not we're just going to play them like all the way off. And you know,
they were just cutting people off.
Yeah, they were just like, nope, you're gone. Yeah. Like at the Golden Globes, I remember. Who was it? Regina King, I think, when she was making her speech, and they started to play her off, and then she got really serious with it, and they're like, "Ah, crap, we got to pull back and we got to finish."
Yeah.
This time, they would have just cut her off mid sentence if they had to. No remorse for the Grammys.
I mean, it often is pretty. They're pretty smart about like it depends on sort of what you're talking about, I guess. If you're because mm-hmm. I mean, Regina King, especially, was talking about sort of a social issue, talking about trying to get more women involved in filmmaking, and I think that they were smart enough to realize that's not something you want to kind of just shove under the table.
Smart's when you're a good word when you're
kind of in your laundry list of people, you know, you're trying to rattle off who at the label marketing, like, okay, those are the kind of moments where.
But when Drake says the word "butt" and then he gets cut off, that's maybe something you wanted to hear more of.
Okay, well, the problem with the "butt," I think, is that I mean, because the "butt" and the decision had to be made before he said "butt," like it had to be made in that half a split
and
second.
And then it was just too late.
And
after
the timing
that.
Just happened a lot. You know, they said "go," and then that's when he said "butt." Because it to me, people are ragging all over the Grammys for cutting him off. To me, when I hear the tape back, it sounded like he did have a moment where, because the applause started to pick up, and then it seemed like, okay, you know, that was going to be the end of the moment.
I was in a conversation that also included somebody who was at the Grammys, and they said that they got maybe like an extra half a second live than we got on the telecast, and it seemed like live that what Drake was doing at that point was pivoting to just your general kind of thank you list, like, oh, I appreciate this, and but you know, like, having said all that of how Grammys are meaningless, thanks for giving me one, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, like
he cared enough to show up. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no, that was very surprising, and I want to hear the rest of the speech on like the next Drake like B side, or maybe like a secret song. You can kind of bury it at the end of Scorpion 2 and just be like, you know, if you play for 5 minutes after the last track, you can hear like what the acknowledgments would have been at that point.
And if you're under him, you ain't getting over him. I got no rules, I count them.
Let's go by the big categories. Best New Artist, Dua Lipa. I think we all kind of thought that she probably was the best winner in terms of she had the most pop success, although it feels like we were kind of making the case, and Paul certainly was last week, that Luke Combs might sneak in because he represented country and he's really big commercially in country. But yeah, Dua Lipa just feels like the right winner, and her reaction was really nice to see as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to split hairs, I think you could point out that her album came out in 2017, but she was big in the UK before she was big here. And, you know, her first big hit, New Rules, I think still peaked on the Hot 100 in 2018. So I think it's forgivable, more so even than Luke Combs, who actually had two country airplay number ones by the time of the last Grammys. So that not being an exception, I think she's about as deserving a new artist winner as we've had in a long time. So yeah, no problems with Dua Lipa there.
Do we like her acceptance speech where she said, "I guess we stepped up," immediately followed by Neil Portnow's speech?
Yeah, if you were Neil Portnow backstage watching that, you just do the full body cringe at that, I think. Like, ah, that stupid phrase, I'm just never going to shake it. But
if nothing else, you knew he had to say something about it. Mm-hmm. I feel like at the very least he didn't ignore it. He knew he had to
didn't
say
ignore
something.
It, but he was a little self congratulatory about it. I did not particularly care for the Neil Portnow acceptance speech or whatever. I don't know what you want to call that, but but the Grammys he put together did most of the work for him. So kudos to him for that. I guess the task force had their intended consequence. So I think this actually would have been a great Grammys for Neil Portnow to just not appear at all, especially because we were running so long already. If he had just kind of let the show do the speaking for him, I think he would have been much better off. But
yeah,
still a good job.
I feel like you can't. I mean, you know, at the end of your 17 years of tenure, which, you know, is I think people like that's a long time. 17 years to be running that organization. I think with the Music Modernization Act, because he's been a champion for calling for a lot of that in many years past on many award shows for some act of Congress. So I think, you know, even though that wasn't necessarily directly alluded to, I think that was sort of a victory of sorts for them to be there as well. And I think, I mean, yeah, I guess that there's always the big question of, yeah, do you avoid the topic last year that made you, or do you, you know, because if he runs from it, he's sort of, you know, coward, you know, of course he couldn't face it or whatever. I mean, yeah, I don't think it was necessarily the smoothest sort of callback to it. But, you know, it wasn't he didn't fumble the moment, at least.
No, and he didn't go viral for anything. And nobody's talking about Neil Portnow today except for us, and that's probably the best he could have hoped for. So, yeah. But back to Dua Lipa. I think I said this in the last podcast. We talked about her potentially winning. She's the one of this bunch that I think that it seems pretty clear is still on the rise.
Yeah, has the most upside for sure.
Yeah, so I think this isn't going to be one of those ones where we look back in a decade like, Dua Lipa, how did she ever win?
For sure. And also, I want to give a shout out to that introduction for that award. I thought that was actually that was Alessia Cara and Bob Newhart.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was kind of fun, actually.
That was really back cute. In the 60s. And I think, the way that, especially Bob, when he was, okay, we got it. Like, I'm old.
But just her expressions, her comic timing, it really worked. It could have been cheesy. That was really
good. Yeah, doing a variety show. This is the chemistry is real.
Yeah.
Another new Bob Newhart show with Alessia Cara.
Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now.
All right, song and record of the year. So Childish Gambino, This is America. I thought, because I grew up before you guys when the Grammys.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. It was songs like Fast Car and Another Day in Paradise, these socially conscious songs. So I thought, maybe it is too polarizing, but how about that? It wasn't.
Yeah, I was looking back on it today, and the last record/song of the year winner I could find that you could maybe define as a protest song would be Not Ready to Make Nice, the Dixie Chicks song from 2007.
Yeah.
And that wasn't like a societal ills protest song so much as a you asshole stop blacklisting us kind of song. If you want to go back to a more kind of generally thematic protest song, maybe Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen in 1995. It was about the AIDS epidemic. At least that was a little bit more about social conscience and things like that. And then, go back even further, We Are the World, Fast Car, etc. A historic win for any number of reasons. That's a big one. Obviously, as we've already mentioned, the first rap song to ever win in either category, winning in both. I did see some blowback today. So some people aren't too happy about this being the one to kind of crack the seal on that because, Childish Gambino, he's had kind of a, his history in rap isn't necessarily the traditional success story. A lot of people not big fans of his earlier work, which was a little more sophomoric and a little bit less, conscious. Obviously some big carryover from him being a huge force in television and movies and just kind of the entertainment world in general, obviously being a multiple-time winner for Atlanta and at the Emmys. It's not the purest. And also, it's not the purest rap song to begin with. It's got kind of a spoken word element. It was nominated for Best Rap Song Performance for some reason.
And won,
yes. I think, if Cardi won, I mean, that's also a hybrid song, too. I like it. But, it's not the most – if you were to pick one song to be the first rap song, this wouldn't be the most emblematic song. But it's a legitimate hit, and it's a legitimate, song of message and of particularly 2018 timeliness. So I think I have no real problem with it being the first winner of these categories, and it's about time. So hopefully, my question is after this, and this was such such a message song, such a headline grabbing song and video, also video of the year winner. Will it make it easier for less kind of clicky songs to win as rap songs? Will it make it easier for Drake to win next year if he just has another huge hit, or I don't know Kendrick Lamar if he has another Humble. It's going to be interesting to see whether this is the new norm or if it's just an aberration based on this being just such a pure kind of Grammy song to appeal to non-hip-hop fans, maybe.
Yeah, I wonder just how much having even the word America in the title of voters thought, I'm gonna do the right thing. I'm gonna say that this is really important. We need this type of message.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Travis, what's your take on this song? I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this song before.
I don't know if we've ever discussed the song before. Okay, so one song of the year actually pretty early in the night, which, you know, okay, fine. That kind of foreshadowed, I think, record of the year because they don't, not that they necessarily know, but I guess you don't want the same person up there twice within the last, you know, the last sure. 5 minutes because that's kind of weird. But when it didn't win Best Rap Song.
Was not nominated for Best Rap Song.
It was not nominated for Best Rap Song. Okay, so to not be nominated in the Best Rap Song category was, I guess, really that's something that I don't know if anybody really caught during the nominations process, but that was a weird choice to me. Looking back, because I don't know how the best song of the year is not technically the best song of its genre, but I was like, I need a fresh listen to this song because I haven't heard it in a couple months. You know, just it's not a song that I necessarily seek out because it's not like, you know, an easy catchy kind of bop. I mean, it's like a well crafted. I don't know. It's almost like you're like if it were like in an advanced college course and you had to like come up with something like it's very, has all the layers of meaning and to me, it's more like, okay, if I pick a song of the year versus a record of the year, and that to me is actually kind of hard because with song of the year, it's supposed to be about the songwriting. Yeah. And I always wonder if that to people means sort of just the lyrics themselves, just like what the words are. Is it, you know, is it the structure? If you put it on sheet music, is that what the song?
I'd love to hear This Is America on piano.
Just in terms of, you know, what makes up a song, I guess, versus what elements do you think make up a song? Because lyrically, okay, fine. It's, you know, it's okay. You know, I think it's, I don't know. I don't think it's anything, I don't want to say not special, but I am surprised that so many people gravitated towards it. I think to your point that maybe, yes, especially in a year where, I mean, everything that's going on politically, everything that's going on, even with the Grammys in the past year, I'm sure there's a lot of people who thought that this has to be a moment where we could, you know, make something happen that has never happened before. Mm-hmm. Childish Gambino to be that person, to Andrew's point, is going to be interesting to see how that's looked at in hindsight, because I think, I mean, even fans who I know of rap music and who enjoy Childish don't necessarily love this song. It's a song that I don't think anybody dislikes, but I don't think a lot of people know exactly what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, and if there's one thing that I sort of hope for this song in terms of like the historical perspective looking back 10, 20 years from now, I hope it doesn't get kind of written off as like a cheap message song, because I don't think that's what it is. I mean, it's the way people talk about it now, you might think it's like one of these kind of heavy-handed, easy message songs like Same Love by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis or something like that. I think it's a really like murky song. It's both sonically and lyrically. Like, it doesn't really make any big statements. It rather than capturing like any sort of like specific political point, I think it just kind of captures the feeling of America in 2018. And that's a much harder thing to do, in my opinion. I actually think it's a really great song. I think that it's not an easy song, and it is sort of a strange song to be this much of a moment, because, like, you know, as you say, it's not an easy listen. It's not a song that people sort of put on and zone out to. And if it wasn't for the music video, maybe it wouldn't have had this kind of lightning rod aspect to it. But I think it's a song that I think is going to age really well, because it's really structurally interesting, and it doesn't take the easy way out. And there's parts of it that really kind of stick in your head and like kind of catch you off guard. And I think it's an incredibly well put together song. I think it's an incredibly interesting song. I think it's a really good song. I think it's actually a fairly worthy song of the year, even divorced from its implications about being the first hip hop winner and being the first political winner in a long time. I think history is going to be really kind to the song.
I didn't know him and I didn't know me. Cloud 9 was always out of reach. Now I remember what it feels like to fly. You give me butterflies.
All right, album of the year, Kacey Musgraves, Golden Hour. Talking about Adele before, whether 21 or 25. Yeah, there are some years where it just feels like we know what the album's going to be. This year, it didn't feel that way. I'm going to my main question is, it always comes down to album of the year at the end of the Grammys. Does that itself feel like maybe it's starting to be a little outdated to end with album of the year in an era where maybe the album isn't the big measuring stick of an artist's work at this point, especially in a year where there wasn't maybe one consensus album.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I still like it, well, A, because it provides some sort of historical continuity. You know when you get to the end, it's going to be the album of the year. And I think there is still some credence.
There was a year, though, pretty recently, I can't remember which year it was, where Record of the Year actually was the final award.
I don't remember which one that was.
It must have been I'll have to look it up. But I remember I think maybe in the year that like Beyonce presented it or something, maybe when Uptown Funk won or something, where it felt like, whoa, like this is a statement that they're going to flip this up.
But I think if you asked, if you pulled 100 artists about which would they rather win between, Record / Song of the Year and Album of the Year, I think most of them would probably still say Album of the Year.
It's still a greater piece of work.
Yeah, it's a greater piece of work. It's a greater investment. It defines a year for an artist more than a song or a record does. And that's the other thing is that there is a divide between song and record, which makes giving one of them kind of a priority over the other makes that an awkward proposition. Was it you, Trevor, that suggested in our Grammy categories that should exist column that we should combine record and song of the year and make video the fourth big one? Actually, no, I'm sorry. I think that was Chris Payne again.
I was going to say, this is new to me.
But that was his idea, is that we combine song and record of the year, make video of the year, the fourth tentpole category, which I kind of like the idea of that, because it does feel like the distinction between song and record, you can make it, you can define it as minutely as you want to, but I think most of the people voting, if they're going to vote for one, they're going to vote for the other two.
Yeah.
So,
but I do hate, I mean, I would hate that I do like there's a songwriter's like specific award. I think that's something.
Yeah, just give it to everybody. You can't divide songs into production and writing. It's all one big thing.
Isn't that not? Can't you look at half the performances? Like, well, okay, if Shawn Mendes can take In My, and I'm not saying this is like the penultimate example, but to take a song. I mean, Lady Gaga is a great example of this. You can take any song that she writes, transfer it onto so many different instruments. Like, I mean, that is just a good songwriting. Mm-hmm. You can't take any record and just, flip
right,
it
well,
on
how about
head
this?
And say, okay, this is just as good a record.
How about we merge record and song of the year and also institute a new songwriter of the year award? I think there should be one of those, right? There's producer of the year. Why is there not songwriter of the year?
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, producer of the year is basically the only like sort of person award that's not really given for.
That's true.
There is like a body of work I think people submit with it, and
yeah,
they kind of
you
win
can see,
for
like, the
those
individual
credits.
Listings, yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think people always wonder why Grammys shy away from, artist of the year and those kind of person-centric rather than work-centric awards, maybe harder to defend.
Yeah. But Album of the Year, it feels like the most like the marquee category. It feels like Best Picture because it's the biggest cat. It says it's the most all-encompassing, and it rewards the greatest piece of work in terms of size and stature.
But if people, that's assuming people still listen to albums the way they did 15, 20 years ago.
Could be looking at a Playlist of the Year award in 10, 20 years'
wow.
time. No, absolutely.
Like wow.
Yeah. Don't rule it out, but I think for now,
Rap Caviar week of June 18th.
I prefer June 25th, but that's basically where we're going with this. I think, but for now, I think Album of the Year is still the award to beat, and that's fine.
One of the rules we have for what fits on the folk chart is, can you hear the dirt in it? And
it's a very, very strictly defined concept, I'm sure.
I think she's just hard to define overall, and. New single, Rainbow, it debuts on the AC chart this week, debuts on the country airplay chart this week, but a song you kept hearing in bits and pieces, Butterflies, from the album, sounds like it should be a smash. Got to number 56 on the country airplay chart. I guess more than anything, people just don't know sonically what to do with Kacey Musgraves, where she's a little too pop for country, so a little too country for pop. I think they're good songs, but maybe she's just... She just doesn't fit, and that can be a great thing for music, but commercially, it can get you in a little trouble.
With this album, there's millions of songs that get played on country radio every year that are just as polished, if not more so, than all the songs. Poppy, I mean, it's not like these songs have dance beats aside from High Horse, which doesn't even feel like a Maren Morris doing the middle with Zed sort of song. That just feels like a country song with a little bit more of a thump to it. I think it's lazy of country music to find reasons not to play this album, the singles off of it. I think, if you want to call it sexism, I think that's not inaccurate. If you wanted to say that radio programmers are afraid to take chances, I think that's accurate too. I think that and hopefully that this win kind of proves to be an inflection point for Kacey Musgraves and her radio fortunes. I think this is as good an excuse as any that radio programs will ever have to maybe actually give her a legitimate chance and see if a song like Butterflies or like High Horse or Rainbow can kind of start taking off. Kacey Musgraves, it always feels like maybe she's holding a little something back. Like, they're very neat songs. They're very good songs. They're, from a songwriting perspective, they're immaculate. From a production standpoint, they're absolutely gorgeous. I like them a lot. I don't love any Kacey Musgraves songs from the last two albums because they just feel a little bit too neat to me. But in terms of an album of the year, look, this album means, like I said before, this album means a lot to a lot of people we work with, a lot of people we know, and just a lot of people in general. It's the kind of album that really, really connected with some people. So it didn't really connect with me in the same way. It doesn't resonate with me in the same way. But it's the kind of album that should be winning Album of the Year because it's an album that a lot of people are passionate about. It's an album that doesn't quite sound like most other albums that are in the mainstream right now. It's an album that definitely comes from a singular perspective and a singular songwriter. I have no problem with it winning.
It's just one of those years where it wasn't the absolute, it wasn't the thriller.
No,
there wasn't a thriller this year for an album. So,
I mean, that was the case. Was that not the case last year?
Well, I would say
isn't that the case most years? Oh, you think it was Damn last year?
Damn was last year. Oh, Damn lost to 24 Karat Magic.
Yeah.
And, I'll go to my grave not understanding what happened there. But this year, there wasn't even a 24 Karat Magic, where it was just a big pop album by an established pop superstar that kind of pays homage to the songs of yesteryear.
Not the tribute album win.
No,
that's what it almost sounds like you're making.
That's kind of what it was. It was a tribute album to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Babyface and Teddy Riley. Like he basically said as much in his acceptance speech. So, I mean, and not like those albums were necessarily winning a ton of Grammys back in their heyday, but for older voters who, you know, grew up in the heyday of Babyface and Janet Jackson and New Edition and Guy and New Jack Swing, then yeah, like that album hit a real, real sweet spot, and that propelled it to victory over actually a much more commercially successful album in Kendrick Lamar's Damn.
Maybe Bruno got that hindsight victory that the rest of them won't be able to get.
Yeah. But one thing I'm curious about, Trevor, is that you were the only one of us who predicted that this album would win, and you seemed pretty confident that it would. What about it gave it that kind of front-runner status to you?
Well, I mean, part of it, I wondered if we kind of got into a snowball effect, because it's really easy once November hits to see, you know, what everybody's thinking. And I was on the Wikipedia page for this album last night, and we're talking year end list. This is, let me run through just really quickly where everybody put it on their year end list. Or at least ones that were worthy enough to make it on Wikipedia.
Let's have it.
So we got American Songwriter, number one, Associated Press, number two, Billboard 3, Complex 36, Consequence of Sound 9, EW 1, Independent 4, Noisy 2, NPR 3, Paste 44, People 1, Apple 1, Pitchfork 2, Pop Matters 2, Rolling Stone 2, Sputnik 1, Stereo Gum 1, Taste of Country 1, Idolator 3, Time 8, Uproxx 2, Vulture 4. So it just felt very, like, you know, I mean, I don't know what Consequence and Paste, if they just wanted to be, you know, contra, complex, yeah. But it just felt very like, okay, like, oh, so everyone across the board, genre, regardless, for the most part, you know, major publication, independent, you know, sort of alternative publication, everybody kind of thought, okay, this is an agreeable album. When I listened to it, and this almost sounds like this. I don't know if it sounds like it's going to be a knock or whatever, but I remember listening to this album, and it's probably about 2/3 of the way through when I stopped and realized, like, kind of to Gary's point, maybe none of this. There were a few songs that got me, like Space Cowboy. I liked, a song called Weekend.
Lonely Weekend.
Lonely Weekend.
Underrated song. That might be my favorite on the album too. Yeah,
I enjoyed that one a lot, and there were. But it was about 2/3 of the way through, I stopped and I realized, you know, this is probably the first album I've heard in a while where I'm not thinking to myself, I'm tired of this. Is this, how much longer till this is over?
Sure.
And so maybe it didn't necessarily have the big bangers where I got to hear this song again. You know, I don't ever want this album to end. But there was no point in the album where I thought to myself, oh, okay, this is, you know, get over. This is, you're not doing anything. This is boring. Keep moving. Why is this taking so long? So in that sense, and I think kind of what we learned with Bruno last year, agreeability goes a long way. People think that album of the year has to be this sort of outstanding, innovating, you know, pushing it forward, banger. Let me hear this all day, all night. No, sometimes it's just, you know, an album that everyone can sit around and say, hey, I'm going to put on Golden Hour, and nobody's going to say, ah, oh, damn, really?
Take my hand, stage a wham, heaven's not ready.
can sort of combine them at this point, the pop categories we talked about. So Ariana, Sweetener won for Best Pop Album. We thought that would be the case. No surprise there.
Let's talk about this, though. Let's talk about pop solo performance.
My favorite.
Because
Beck got robbed. What happened?
I was going to say, you would have lost the farm, the house, the state, the... You swore.
Havana. I didn't swear.
Wasn't there a song called Havana that was going to win?
I did think that Havana Live, the Camila Cabello.
We literally saw Havana Live.
Yeah, that's true. And boy, there's that. That song never needs to be played on a war show again. I love Havana, great song. Camila's a great performer. And they did some nice things at the end there with the Ricky Martin and J Balvin and all that. I never want to hear that song on another award show enough. And same goes for Shawn Mendes and In My Blood. But,
at least he did a nice – he did a different –
he did.
Really nice.
Whatever. No Shawn Mendes. Wow. But in any event, look, I didn't feel that confident in Havana Live winning, but we've had enough of those stupid live versions. And Paul agreed with me on this, so I wasn't alone. We've had enough of those stupid live versions winning over the years that it didn't seem like that was going to impact its chances that much. So Lady Gaga, clearly, like the award season momentum from A Star Is Born and from Shallow, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats sort of thing.
But how interesting, because I thought when I saw that Joanne had won, I was like, and Joanne's song won. But
Joanne, so, parentheses, where do you think you're going, question mark. Let's give it its full credit.
Sure. Some art designer spent a lot of his time on that. I thought that was a real indication, especially in the pre-show when those awards came out, that Shallow was it won the first award televised on the evening for Best Pop Duo Group Performance. So Bradley Cooper, by the way, has a Grammy now. I thought that was like the Shallow momentum. I was like, it was about to be the Titanic up in there. I was like, Shallow is about to just take all of you out. And so, I mean, it's so interesting that it stopped. And I don't know if that's sort of a consolation because people thought, let's give Gaga the pop categories to offset not winning in the big four. But yeah, I mean, to me, Joanne, in some ways, probably the biggest upset of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I think you still see it occasionally in those genre categories. It's just people, voters who either don't know all the songs or don't really care about all the songs. They just kind of look for the biggest name. I mean, the one that really stuck in my craw was the Best Dance Album, Best Dance Electronic Album, went to Justice for a remix album. And beating some really interesting artists who did like pretty interesting albums last year. John Hopkins, Sophie, first ever trans nominee, I believe, in that category.
Sophie Tucker
was in there too. It still comes down sometimes that there's a lot of lazy people voting in all these categories, and sometimes in the genre ones maybe they don't get as much attention as the big four do because people feel like, oh, it doesn't really matter as much.
I mean, how much time do people really take?
I hope they're going in deep and really analyzing the differences between the album version of Joanne and the Where Do You Think You're Going version of Joanne.
But even just to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder how many people who voted for that song even heard it. Because you hear rumors all the time, especially the Oscars, people vote for movies. And I know movies are a much longer, you know, time effort than a song, but they vote for movies all the time without seeing them because, you know, that's just, yeah, that feels right. That's where the momentum is.
Yeah, but we should say that the other nominees in that category were all weird for the most part. Like it was Beck for some reason with Colors, and Ariana Grande with what is now her like fifth biggest hit of the last 12 months, God Is a Woman, and Post Malone for Better Now. Is he a rapper? Is he a pop star or whatever? And I don't know, what was the last one? It was Havana Live, which, maybe that live does throw some people off. So there was no real good choice in that category, I don't think. God Is a Woman was probably the best one, but it was always a category that was going to go to something weird if it wasn't going to go to her. So, I guess may as well just go to Gaga in the year of Gaga.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore? I'm falling.
Maybe there are some people who are saving their juice for the Oscars. They're thinking, all right, she's going to win there. She's up against All the Stars, which is another big hit. But I think most people sort of presume, and certainly the Grammys bore out as well, giving it Best Song for Visual Media over All the Stars, that Shallow is the front runner there by a pretty considerable margin. And, you know, that's the one where she's probably going to have the live duet with Bradley Cooper. And maybe they're saying, all right, well, you know, let's give another song a chance at the Grammys because the Oscars is what it's really going for anyway. By the way, what did you guys think of that Shallow performance, that solo Lady Gaga Shallow performance with the silver bodysuit and the dramatic hand motions?
While I was watching it, I remember thinking to myself, I was of two minds, because part of me was like, what is she doing with this song? And then part of me was like, okay, you know, first of all, if that's what Gaga needs to get into her performance element, you know, I'm okay with that. I think the nice thing that she did is try something different. And what I mean by that is I would imagine in 2 weeks' time, we're going to get the proper, quote unquote, performance of Shallow with, you know, her and Bradley strumming on the guitar, and she's in a, you know, maybe she's wearing a gown, maybe she's wearing, you know, something sort of standard, what you would expect from, we're recreating A Star Is Born for you all. So I kind of like that she took on a different approach with it. I know it was not everybody's cup of tea trying to turn it into sort of a rock power anthem. And I mean, to be fair, I think at least she hit all the notes. She sang it very, very well.
Always does. Yeah.
The meme, of course, the first sort of hanging on the side at the end with the one eye staring at the camera got a lot of people. But, you know, is it going to go down as my favorite Shallow performance or maybe the most memorable? No, probably not. But I do like that she at least wanted to inject some energy into it. This is a song that I think a lot of people have heard so many different ways. They probably, to the point about making it a Song of the Year songwriting award, you think of it in one frame of mind and that it's only one particular thing. And maybe she wanted to say, look, you know, I've sang the song so many times, so many different ways. People have seen the movie. They know what Shallow is. Let me show them a different side of that same song and still knock it out.
Yeah, I mean, we had a very long and involved debate about this performance in the edit Slack earlier today. And it kind of came into a lot of people were saying what you were kind of saying. It's like, yeah, we've already seen this so many times. Do something a little different with it. Can't begrudge her that. I agree with that. I wish if she was going to do that she had also changed up the arrangement of the song a little bit to be a little bit more, I don't know, dynamic or just less staid than the kind of strict power ballad version that they've done however many times already. And then it might have fit a little bit better with the kind of dramatic visuals of her, you know, kind of going nuts. But I thought that the visual of the performance didn't match the music. I thought it was really awkward. What about you, Gary?
Maybe we'll get the quiet version in a couple weeks.
Shallow, the quiet version. Yeah. I saw a lot of people, I think most of the tweets sort of summed up, can somebody tell Lady Gaga she's not performing with Metallica this year? Which I thought was, you know, a fair critique.
All right. Beyond the awards, other highlights. Alicia Keys was way more dynamic, way more fun than I would have expected. I thought she was a great host.
I was scared. I was scared for Alicia because, like I said, I think on the podcast maybe before, maybe in the back room, I never heard her crack a joke. And so I really thought that she was going to kind of have to, you know, just, you know, they take out Jimmy Fallon and put in Alicia Keys and you better make this work. Eek. And she, you know, even at the beginning, it started off a little, you know, I'm not a big fan of sort of the haze, you know, like sort of trying to force the crowd into it or people kind of have to repeat things twice, you know. Oh, we're having a good time tonight. Are we having a good time? You know, it's like, okay, yes, we're having
left
a good
side,
time.
Let me hear it.
But I think, I mean, first of all, anybody that can whip out Michelle Obama is going to get, you know, at least a B+ in the book, if nothing else. Still not quite. I need to figure out 100% why Jada Pinkett was also. I know she has a. I think she has a band. My mom was saying. So
Wicked Wisdom.
Why.
They played Ozfest in the late 90s.
Oh wow. Okay. Because I was still. That was the one thing that kind of threw me off for half a second. But overall, I think Alicia. I mean, Alicia really did a good job in my mind of. You know, not trying to be who she's not, and by that I mean a comedian and doing a lot of the skits and those sort of gags and things, but really her breaks with a lot of music, which, of course, it's a Grammy Award, so that's entirely appropriate. Sort of the Hazel Scott tribute when she sort of, you know, walked us through music history with the dueling pianos, I thought was that really got some rave reviews. I thought that was a really smart choice. So, yeah, I think overall, going into it, I really was concerned about how this was going to turn out. And yeah, I think you're right. I think actually not only did she just do a, you know, carry the show and didn't mess up, I think she actually really proved people wrong.
Yeah,
myself for sure.
A lot of comments are online were how has she not been hosting this for years, and can she host it for years going forward?
Yeah, I think she set the tone really well. You know, she's a very relaxed public speaker. Sometimes I think she can get a little bit rambling and a little bit off topic, but she certainly, you know, she kind of put everybody at ease. She made it seem less formal than Grammys past. And you know, the music breaks were nice. Again, maybe went on a little long for my taste, but clearly they had the minutes to fill. I saw a lot of people tweeting about like, oh, this is probably where Ariana Grande was scheduled to perform before she bowed out. I think that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, she was fun, and she seemed. She rose to the moment, but not in a way that felt self-conscious. And especially when you compare her either to someone like James Corden, who's a very buttoned up kind of like, oh, this this is me, James Corden, hosting the Grammys. Alicia Keys never felt that self-conscious about it. And compared to someone like LL Cool J, who really just doesn't have that much of a presence as a host and just kind of, you know, keeps the line moving. It's like, oh, okay, here's who's next. Here's what just happened. Here's a sponsor we need to do a 5-minute read for. Alicia Keys, yeah, I don't know if I want to see her doing this the next 10 years. I think it could get a little tiresome after a little while, but I think it was what the Grammys needed this year. And yeah, I'll call her back for next year maybe too. Yeah, sure.
I'll also say shout out to her for flexing her muscle, because let's not let it go unnoticed that Alicia Keys also presented Song, Album, and Record of the Year. So she didn't just, you know, she wasn't there just to host, yeah, and, you know, let everybody else have the shine. She really, you know.
And dropped on at least one occasion the 15 previous Grammy wins, which is a lot of Grammy wins. So kudos to Alicia.
I don't think people realized. I knew she had that many, because I knew she ran those R&B categories for years. Her and Beyonce just like traded off. But I mean, to put it in perspective, 15 is Adele has 15 Grammys. So Alicia Keys is right there in that same company.
Mentioned Ariana, the spot where she might have performed. We did get that at 9:09. We got Ariana on the Grammys, that Apple Music
app. Oh, right.
So the Memoji.
There she was.
Yeah.
That commercial was so, not, it was, I wouldn't say it was so long, but it was long enough to where I was like, did she just buy, like, are they going to play this whole song and just buy out 7 rings for the commercial?
Too many of those commercials in general. There were like 3 of them, right? Like, and they all felt like they went on forever.
T-Mobile definitely, you know, put some dollars up there for sure.
Yeah, but I think it is the one thing you can maybe kind of ding the Grammys for this year is that they didn't really have that A-list performance. There was no one huge pop star of the moment. You just come out and, okay, 2018 was my year. This is the song that defined it. And I'm going to play it, and this is going to be your lasting memory from the Grammys.
But that was kind of the reflective of the awards, and sort of, I mean, sure. That sort of seemed to be the whole temperature of the ceremony.
That could have been Ariana Grande. That could have been Childish Gambino if he showed up. That certainly could have been Drake. So, you know, the fact that they didn't get one of those A-plus listers does make the Grammys maybe feel a little bit more low-key than in years past, a little bit less of an event. But I do think there's something to be said for the fact that the lack of these kind of established superstars did allow for some more breathing room for kind of new voices to emerge. People like her and St. Vincent, Janelle Monáe, like people like that who might not have even been able to make a full performance on the main telecast before. They got to kind of spread their wings a little bit, and the results were pretty positive.
Doesn't that kind of sum up what we've been maybe saying for the last year or so, that we've seen all these big pop stars come back and maybe they haven't quite reclaimed the glory they had before, that maybe that's what music was this year.
It's a transition period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rebuilding year.
Kind of fitting.
Yeah.
To that point about performance is one thing, yeah, that I was actually really kind of surprised by that I think that may have dropped the ball was, I guess for the number of celebrity deaths in the past year, the tributes were not – there was no outstanding tribute. I think in particular the Aretha tribute, not that it was bad or weak, because I think all three of those singers who sang Natural Woman were great. And, I mean, they did justice to the song. But it felt a little – just
it's pro forma.
Just brief.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like kind of like the backup option. It was like, oh, if we can't get this home run swing of I don't know, you know, I mean, Mary J. Blige doing a duet with Adele or something like that. Yeah. And yeah, let's get Yolanda Adams and Andre Day and Fantasia.
I find it very hard to believe that you couldn't get an all-star lineup for Aretha Franklin at the
Grammys.
You
think, but a couple things about that. One is that it was like a half a year ago now at this point almost that Aretha died. And maybe it feels like, as you said, there was a funeral. There have been any number of other tributes since then at other award shows. Maybe the general attitude with Aretha is just kind of less is more. And it's like, okay, like they got such backlash for that, and obviously there were very good reasons for that backlash. But maybe the thought is, okay, let's not take a big swing with this. Let's just kind of do three artists who are very obviously indebted to Aretha, who can do justice to her vocally. Just have them do one song, keep it moving. And there's something to be said for that. I'm curious about what you guys thought about the In Memoriam montage, leaving off some very big names. The biggest one I think being XXXTentacion, who obviously is has. You know, the mere mention of his name is fraught with any number of problematic concerns. But for a death montage to not even acknowledge his existence felt a little bit inappropriate to me. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I guess for some people, you know, the question fundamentally is, you know, is an in memoriam just sort of a fact and, you know, sort of a book of death certificates, or is it suggesting that there's some sort of honor or, you know, esteem attached to being mentioned among these people in this company? And I guess, you know, whether the Grammys have a hard decision on that, they probably didn't want to err in offending people by sort of trying to memorialize them in a way that made him seem, you know.
You can't really disagree with that, I guess. To me, it would just be these are the people that had a significant impact on the music industry in some way, shape, or form. Maybe it was good. Maybe it was bad. I'd be curious going back, you know.
Well, I don't think we want to, you know. I mean, I don't think we want to celebrate people because they're bad, right? I mean, I guess unless you don't think.
Not celebrating them for their bad influence in the music industry, but if you had an impact on it, and
so you're saying it's more factual.
I think it's more factual.
You think it's more the book? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, I'm not saying they should have a tribute performance to him.
Sure,
that would be probably inappropriate. And for the record, it wasn't that long ago that XXXTentacion was winning televised awards at major award shows. Was the
AMAs?
The AMAs, right? One best rap album or something along those lines. And his mother went up and got a fairly nice ovation and accepted a very emotional speech on behalf of her dead son. To go from that to him not even being mentioned, I mean, there were some very obscure names in that death montage that I guarantee you 90% of the viewing audience had no memory of. For one of the biggest stars of the past few years to not even, you know, get a second on the memoriam? I don't know. That seemed a little weird to me.
I'm curious how you would vote, Andrew, if you were a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America for the steroid guys.
I use relatively similar logic. I mean, that's obviously more achievement based, but I do think if you had a major impact on the sport, you should get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
but look, I know there's other perspectives to take on this. I don't mean to shortchange anyone who, you know, especially if you know that there's a triggering aspect to seeing his name unexpectedly. There's considerations there. It's obviously a very complex topic, and I don't mean for my words to be the final one by any stretch of the imagination. I expected to see his name there. I'm surprised I didn't.
All right. I'm just going to wrap with three of my favorite tweets from the night. Kevin Rutherford in our charts department. One point when Gaga was on stage, Gaga about to start talking about 100 people in a row.
I am amazed that did not maybe at the Oscars.
I blame the Golden Globes for making her conscious of that being a meme. Maybe she was before, maybe she wasn't. But now that she knows it's a thing, because, you know, Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh are cracking jokes about it. So now that she knows it's a thing, either she's going to get up there and do it like very wink-wink, or she's just going to ignore it altogether. And either way, I think she's just better off leaving it alone at this point.
Yeah, Bill Wordy, former editor here at Billboard, tweeted, "That stream of people running to the stage for Travis Scott are all the men who haven't performed tonight."
Damn.
With a smile.
Interesting point, Bill Wordy.
Yeah. I'll give number one to Stephen Horowitz, former, still sometimes Billboard contributor.
Yeah, occasional Billboard contributor, sure.
Given how much it was about her, the Casey Musgraves Award for Casey Musgraves goes to Casey Musgraves.
And a finer recipient there could not be.
Trevor, wrap us up with favorite Grammy moment from the past, I guess. Flashback.
Oh, from the past. Okay. So as we talked, Sunday night, huge night for hip-hop in the top categories. Of course, Childish Gambino, first rap artist to win Record of the Year and Song of the Year. And in recent years, we've also seen the Best New Artist Award go to some hip-hop acts a few years back. Chance the Rapper was named Best New Artist, and back in 2014, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, I think people kind of forgot that they also won Best New Artist, so hip-hop has had good representation there as well. That leaves one of the big four categories where we just can't quite seem to get it going. That is the almighty Album of the Year, and kind of with Alicia Keys when she mentioned while presenting the award that it had been 20 years since Lauryn Hill had won Album of the Year for The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Alicia Keys also playing some of doo-wop, that thing, during her medley set. So some nice moments for Lauryn Hill out there. I kind of thought Lauryn was going to walk out or something and present Album of the Year. I know that's not Lauryn's style at all, but I was really, really, really hoping for the anniversary. If she got Michelle Obama, she can work wonders and somehow get Lauryn Hill. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, first woman to win 5 Grammy Awards in one night, which she did back in 1999, including Album of the Year and Best New Artist. Really, that album, I mean, by all standards, a masterpiece. Still to this day, one of the best regarded albums really of all time, especially of the 90s, by a woman. Any measure you cut it, that album holds up.
Two points to that is just one is that in that the year that Miss Education won, 1999, first year where all the Album of the Year nominees were either women or female fronted acts. So talk about female representation being a big deal in 2019. This is a nice flashback to that too. It was her, Shania Twain, Garbage, Madonna, and Sheryl Crow. So pretty strong class, and Lauryn Hill a deserving winner. And also another Lauryn Hill to 2019 connection. We talked earlier about Cardi B being the first female solo rapper to win Best Rap Album. Not the first woman to win Best Rap Album, because Lauryn Hill did it herself as a member of the Fugees The Score in 1997.
And tying things to last week, Lauryn beat out Backstreet Boys for Best New Artist. Taking a full circle.
Good year for new artists.
And The Score had that huge cover, Killing Me Softly, which was also in that medley, Alicia Keys, to celebrate Roberta Flack, who did the song originally. So
it's all part of one grand tapestry.
I'm telling you, Lauryn was the through line for so much of what's been going on these past couple of weeks. So in that sense, you know, no physical form at the Grammys, but so much mentioned about Lauryn Hill. Who better to close this episode of the Chartbeat Podcast with? An all-time great song, a Grammy-winning track, number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100, so by all measures, an awesome song. Here it is, the one, the only, Doo-Wop, That Thing.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.